Hey, we need your support to keep the podcasts flowing. Go to explorationsearlylearning.com/support to learn how. One of the big things you can do is shop Amazon with the link we provide. You buy your cat food, you buy your kids' books, you buy whatever it is you buy on Amazon, you pay the regular price. We get a small percentage of it. Everybody wins. A lot of people are doing it. It really supports the shows, and we really appreciate it. Give it a try. Thanks.
Welcome to the Child Care Bar and Grill Podcast. Jeff Johnson coming to you live from upstairs studio. The tickle in my throat went away.
Yay!
We are back to talk about the last five of the, Super 8, Magic 8.
Great movie.
Super 8.
Super 8 was a good movie. And
yes.
What was the Tarantino one?
Seven.
No, it was the 8. It was the... when you're talking later, I'll look it up.
Okay.
That's a good movie, too. Samuel L. Jackson and what's his name? Anyway, you don't care about Jeff talking about movies he doesn't know anything about. you're here for the play. So, number four, should we need to recap?
Yeah, let me do the first three. So, new research was finding that there's a Magic 8 preschool classroom practices. In last episode, we talked a little bit about the article and then did the first three. Number one, reducing your transitions. Number two, improve the level of instruction via asking real open-ended questions. And number three, creating a positive climate. Ready to move to number four?
Let's go to number four.
Increase time teachers listen to children. Children whose teachers spent significant time listening to them showed a stronger grasp of math concepts, letters, and sight words. Surprise. Children who spoke more frequently also had stronger self-regulation and vocabulary skills. Why are you laughing?
Because so much of what I hear is people with the behavior problems trying to get kids to quiet down and shush and listen to the teacher when the teacher should be doing more of the listening. You know what we need?
What?
We need to equip kids with a
quiet spray.
That they can spray at the teachers. The teacher starts rambling on about something and you have 23 kids spray her in the face. If you're having a hard time making this transition to listening to the kids more, maybe do give them spray bottles. That'll get you in line real quick.
Thinking like a holster, and each of them get a little squirt gun, but guns probably aren't allowed. So yeah.
So let's pick this one apart.
Based on just what you said, I'm recalling one of Alfie Cohen's awesome quotes, which is that terrific teachers have teeth marks on their tongues.
Ooh.
Which it can be hard
to
shut your mouth.
Yeah, that's a good one to remember with the alliteration in there. That makes it good on you, Alfie. It's about. Again, goes back to that 17-second pause we talked about a bit too,
and really listening, not already formulating your answer, not already putting in your agenda of where this should go, but really being in the moment and listening, because I think kids can pick up on the fact. I mean, that's that animal, right? They can tell when you're not listening, or when you've already tuned out, or when
you're waiting for your turn to talk.
Your turn to talk. Yeah.
Yeah. And again, if we want children to have decent vocabularies and to use them, they need to practice it.
Which is why I get really concerned when it comes across my radar that yet again, some programs have initiated quiet lunch.
Oh yeah,
like when kids aren't allowed to talk at lunch.
Yeah. Did you didn't tell the story, did you?
About what?
About the talking to the neighbor.
Oh,
you tell, no, you told us.
I told you guys.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
this is that.
So the a lady at the in the audience a few months back, her son was going to kindergarten for the very first time, and she said she had made a commitment to not just ask him when he got home, like, you know,
How was your day?
Like, you know, she wanted to be more specific and engage in more conversation. So she started asking about what he talked about at lunch and who did he sit by at lunch and what were they talking about. And he just kept saying, I didn't talk at lunch. And you know, finally, you know, she's a teacher, so she's kind of poking a little harder. And I guess after a week or so goes by, it finally came out that the reason that he wasn't talking to anybody at lunch was because the lunch monitor had said that you're only allowed to talk to your neighbor, and his neighbor Steve didn't go to that school. Which, you know, we get a chuckle out of it, but it's a reminder of that literalness of, you know, where they are developmentally. I'm not allowed to talk to my neighbor. I'm not realizing that you're calling the person sitting next to me at the table my neighbor, because my neighbor's Steve and he goes to a different school.
And so,
or he's an older dude. Grass once in a while. Yeah.
So we want to increase time teachers listen to children, and maybe we should when we are doing the talking and they're doing the listening, maybe we should be a little bit more thoughtful about what we're saying and what they're hearing. Because if that lunch lady, I'm assuming lady, would have been a little bit more thoughtful about the language she was using, maybe the little guy would have been talking to the kid sitting next to you.
And to unpack why I think the word self-regulation is in here is because when children are engaged in turn-taking talk, they are having to learn how to put themselves on pause in order to wait for the other person. So maybe it serves us as educators and as adults to remember that sometimes, you know, we have to engage in that kind of pause, that self-regulation of waiting my turn.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we do it here while we're podcasting. And I think, we've been doing this for, we're into year number 6 right now.
Woo!
And
damn,
it took a while to get to the point where the conversation is more back and forth and there's listening going on. For a good hunk of the first episode, we were waiting for our turn to talk a lot more than we do now. Now we get distracted every once in a while. One of us will be looking something up on the computer and trying to get the next bit ready to go, or I'll be doing a tech thing, and sometimes we lose that. But the best parts of this show, I'm guessing for the listeners, but for
us,
is the banter when we're listening and really listening and responding in real time.
Yeah, the only time, honestly, that I ever feel that, like, hiccup anymore is when I was kind of done with my thought and everybody's, like, searching on for something really quick.
It's like, oh, she stopped.
Right.
And you're so focused on what you were saying. It was like, oh, she's done. What now?
Yeah, yeah. And so this is something that takes practice, and even for us as adults. Circling back, one of the things that we could do to increase time teachers listen to children is to reduce transition time, because transition time is just about always teacher centered, with the teacher doing the talking and mm-hmm. focus here. And when you have fewer transitions, you have more opportunity for kids to be engaged in and leaders of the conversation than followers of it.
I would say it also links back to number 2, which is improving level of instruction by asking open-ended real questions.
Yeah.
And so if you remind yourself what that looks like, you're going to be more willing to pause and realize the importance of it, you know, facilitating amongst the children.
Yeah, yeah. So, if you start out doing 1 and 2 here, you almost automatically start doing 3 and 4.
Mm-hmm. At least 4.
Yeah, I'm just assuming having fewer transition times and
might lead to a more positive climate.
The kids are going to just feel more settled in and stuff.
Yeah, 3 and 4 could be reversed.
So should we move on to 5?
Sure.
Go.
Plan sequential activities. When children participated in activities that followed a logical order, like completing a puzzle or writing a message, they engaged in higher level thinking, which improved their problem solving skills. This has a couple buzzwords that I would like to get more information on, but at face value, I think this, it makes sense to me, but was there side coaching going on with the puzzle? You know, was it a message that had some context to the child's world? At first read,
it looks like the adult is doing the planning here. I think a lot of that can be accomplished with kids being the boss. The sequential activities kind of fall into place when kids are the boss of their their own
right, and we can't assume that that wasn't happening
yeah,
either.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, eliminating the transition times, they're going to be able to engage in their own activity for sequential activities or sitting down and doing that puzzle.
And I can really easily see how problem-solving skills can be linked to doing puzzles. I would like to know what other items they're calling a logical order.
Yeah. Well, I mean, is dramatic play a logical order? As it folds out, you're creating, as a group, you're creating the rules for the game. I'm going to be the mom. You're going to be the
dad.
Well,
and I might have to be getting dressed.
Yeah, you got to get dressed. You got to get your props ready. You create the scenario, a little bit of a backstory. And then finally, after all that planning goes into place, sequentially, you fall into the play. And then there's a timeline there as well. So I don't know if
and problem solving skills, if that includes communication, like conflict resolution, problem solving skills, definitely the negotiation in the in a dramatic play example, and then also with this puzzle piece isn't fitting, how do I stick with it and figure out how to assemble this puzzle together too?
Well, in block play too, I mean, you got to get a stable foundation before you can add on to it. And if this other person wants to come in and add this block or wants the blue block that you both reach for, you got to compromise. And
well, even rough and tumble when they're taking turns battling each other, you kind of build this order that things are done in. So.
Who's got the link up? Did they have a link to a hyperlink for what the previous sequential activities might be?
They do not.
No, okay. They're not. Okay. No, just to the original article study that was put out in 2015.
Got it.
So I mean, this is stuff I would like to see the kids being as much the boss of it as possible instead of the adult planning activities and doing them at
which
kids.
Based but, on these other seven, I'm that's thinking how, that's the probably
feel,
implied.
That's the feel I get from the rest of the article. Because, I mean, even something like making cupcakes, following that recipe.
Cooking,
and
all
of that stuff.
So making Play-Doh.
Slime.
Making flubber.
Pouring the borax. Yeah, so there's a lot of that going on in truly play-based environments. And so creating more opportunities to support that.
Yeah, so having the supplies handy or making sure seeing what the kids need in the room to accomplish this. So you're not the...
Making sure you have the supplies on hand that are going to assist in this.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. Thank you.
Next one?
Yes, please.
Number 6, promoting cooperative interactions between children. Sounds like relationships. Children who work with their peers were more involved in classroom activities, had better language skills, and were better at self-regulation.
What? So you mean if little humans get to practice being around other humans and interacting with them, they get better at it?
They do.
That's what that's saying, isn't it?
Which isn't going to happen if you're on such a overly rigid schedule and you've got 20 minutes to do this and 20 minutes to that. Your eyeballs are not going to see even opportunities probably for that.
Yeah. Yes. And if you're crisscross applesauce for hunks of the day, well, teaching is being done at you. It's hard for those interactions to unfold too. And I mean, this kind of harkens back again to the reduced transition times and a lot of the others kind of build up to this.
And to kind of link back to our recent unpacking of Mildred, I feel like I know her, of Mildred, of the onlooker play, that knowing that this study was done with preschool kids is realizing that there still might be children who are involved and who are participating but aren't actually doing the thing and making room for that, like watching a kid. I'm imagining promoting interactions between children. So I in my head I'm seeing a bunch of kids maybe at the table. They got Play-Doh going on with that, but there might be somebody still on looking and not ready to actually join in yet.
Yeah,
pushing that.
Now, how would you prefer to see this unfold? Is this something where the adult comes up and pairs kids off and has them working on projects, or is this something that unfolds naturally through their free play?
To go back to number one, if you don't have a lot of transition times, you have larger blocks of free time for the children to be exploring the whole environment, this is going to happen on its own. Okay. They don't need to come in and go, okay, count off, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2. All the ones go to the block area, all the twos go to dress up.
You can't be dividing them into pairs and putting them in big cardboard boxes and telling them to talk to each other?
I don't think so.
Okay.
And working with the peers, I think, also requires the adult to become comfortable with being more that guide on the side, not the sage on the stage, and mm-hmm. becoming more comfortable with children directing their own learning within the environment that you have set up.
Yeah.
And that's the variable I think that often people forget about. This isn't, you know, Lord of the Flies in room 6. We've intentionally set up the classroom environment so that there's opportunities for this to happen.
And so even adults have a hard time with this sometimes. We've seen this at some of the events we've done together where you give adults a chance to go off and do their own thing.
Just do their own thing, but to own the process of their own professional yeah. development and deepening their knowledge and understanding of certain topics. And it can be
if you're used to a hierarchical structure where a teacher or expert is teaching at it's harder to be freed up and be the boss of it.
Yes.
Out of your comfort zone.
Well, if you're used to that mug jug model where yeah. somebody's going to be standing in the front of the room and fill up my mug with all the stuff I need to know, and you're flipping that model on its head, it's going to be uncomfortable for, it could even be, I would argue that it's probably very uncomfortable for children who've been used to a very overly rigid, yes. controlling environment, and then maybe they change schools or whatnot, and they show up at this new place, and there's some trust and relationship that needs to be built with before that child really believes that I am able to go explore over here or hang out with this group of kids until I'm done.
So in a classroom, if you're making that transition from
overly
rigid controlling to letting the kids have more of these cooperative interaction opportunities, you may have a little bit of time where it seems kind of chaotic and uncomfortable because it is a new thing for not only you but for the kids. Mm-hmm. And so then the goal becomes working through that and riding that wave of discomfort, riding that lizard brain, I'm under attack feeling to the other side. Where
or that kinda, it's not working, right? That reactive of like, oh God, it's not working. Yeah. We got to go back to what we were doing before instead of riding the wave to the show.
Because what you might be perceiving as not working is really the transition between the two things.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What's next?
Hold on, I'm making a note that not working is often the transition time. I like that language. I'm going to steal it in my new book. Actually, by this time, I would have already stole it. number 7 of our Magic 8 is foster high levels of child involvement. Children are better at reading comprehension, vocabulary, and math when they are actively involved in an activity, like when the teacher asks them to answer questions or make predictions about the book she is reading. So again, this is my bias and I'll own it forever. There's some language here that I would like to have defined by the people who were writing either the article or who've done the study, mm-hmm. which I'm sure we can get our hands on the study, but not for the next 10 minutes of that's left in this podcast. You know, what were they called? How did they define reading comprehension? You know, how did they test for that vocabulary and math? To me, what I pull out of this is that when children are actively involved with you while you're reading the book or doing whatever that quote unquote lesson might be, and lesson might be that we're making a loaf of bread together. It doesn't mean that it's always that didactic, direct instruction kind of instruction. When you give children the opportunity to jump in while you're reading a book and not see that as a negative thing or as an interruption, there's lots of room for real relevant conversation.
And there's lots of room to foster high levels of child involvement where the teacher is not involved at all.
At all.
And I think this the way it's written seems very still teacher-centered.
Yes.
But after some of the other stuff in the previous ones, they're kind of shying away from that teacher-centeredness. So I would like to see this talking more about actual child-led play, supporting those kind of things, and maybe they get to that.
And not to be too overly picky, but the example used here about when the teacher asks them to answer questions, that kind of negates the open-ended number 2.
Yes.
Usually that kind of stuff is asking questions that we know the answers to. And assuming that perhaps the observations children might have on their own organically with whatever we might be reading could be just as valuable.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, allowing them to have time to get in deep into their play and involved in it, so reduction of transition time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I would have just maybe put a period after activity.
There you go. They didn't need to have
Example. Let me read it. Children are better at reading, comprehension, vocabulary, and math when they are actively involved, period.
Yeah.
With an activity, period.
There we go. Yes.
Strike the rest of those.
There you go. We'll put it in parentheses.
Or room for clarification.
Or maybe just active.
Active.
When they're active. When they're active.
Within an engaging environment. Number eight, then?
Yeah.
Not least of our magic eight, providing math opportunities. Children who take part in... that's confusing. Children who take part in multi-part math problems and discuss math concepts are better prepared for kindergarten and early math success, which is a strong predictor of late elementary school achievement. So, not to pick on the math thing, but you could cross out math and put in language literacy, reading, blocks, art, building, cooking... You get time to get exposed to those concepts and opportunities to engage in activities related to those concepts. Of course, you're going to get better at deepening and understanding concept.
Maybe that one gets edited to children who take part.
Well, yeah, when I read math problems, I thought they're really focusing on math. If you go back to the couple of the other ones, too.
Well, because that's what they're trying to measure.
Yes.
And because somebody who's giving them funding cares about math scores. And.
Mm-hmm.
Math and reading.
So the takeaway from that, instead of sounding like we're... Because, again, for anybody new who might be listening, everybody around this table very much believes that math is something that children should have opportunities to be bumping into on a daily basis, but there's ways for that to look more authentic and more real and not sitting down at a table, you know, doing, like, math flashcards or, you know, you do not need any more teddy bear counters in your program.
No.
I guarantee that.
Well, doesn't math take place in rough and tumble play, too?
Math takes place, I would argue, absolutely everywhere.
But that was in my mind. So rough and tumble play, yes, math takes place.
There are two people on the mat.
Yes.
One has a bloody nose.
Discuss.
I get to punch you three times.
How many stitches does Johnny need? So all in all, this is pretty good stuff.
I will admit it was the first time in a while I got all the way through an article without going, I loved all of it except, and I did appreciate the, this sounds really, you know, ignorant and immature, but I loved the kind of duh, you know, I think anybody could read this. I don't think you need to be an early childhood person to appreciate of what's in here. And I also, what I really locked and loaded on, what I actually posted before I put the link up was the closing statement, which is to remember that they're for. I mean, I really appreciated that there was kind of a realistic understanding that this is what we need to be looking for in a high quality program.
The problem I have with it is it's a little bit complicated. I think it could be narrowed down to three words.
Let them play.
I mean, really, what all of those eight things, that's what they're saying, right?
They are. Yes. And though, to that point, some people need it a little bit more to increase the credibility, who still need more understanding of how much depth is involved in the phrase, let them play. So to that, I would say this provides more language in a way that isn't overcomplicated.
Yeah. And... I don't see the word play in any of this very often.
Oh. Well, that's valid. You know, that touche. That is true.
Which...
But we also don't know. I haven't read the actual study.
Yeah,
we
exactly.
We are unpacking
an article
that was kind of giving an overview of
Yeah, and
that.
As it is, I mean, there's good stuff here. And it's really easy to be a copy editor. On the side after the fact. But no, all in all, there's some good stuff here.
Yes.
Yay for them. Yay for Nashville.
Woo!
Do we need to all go increase Magic 8-Ball sales by having one on our desk to remind us these?
No, I'm going to take one apart and put my own little triangle thing in it.
Ooh, there you go. Make your own Magic 8-Ball.
Anything more to wrap this one up?
No.
Oh, good, because it's about time for the music to start playing.
Woo-hoo! He does have to move his little thing.
This has been the Child Care Bar and Grill Podcast. We'll be back soon with another episode. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for sharing the show. And you go out there and have yourself a playful day. Bye-bye.
Have a good one.
See you later.
This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production.
Oh.
Hey, Jeff here. If you like the podcast, you might dig this. Dan Hodgins is going to join Lisa Murphy and I for 3 gigs in 2018. We're going to be in Portland, Oregon, Indianapolis, Indiana, and Madison, Wisconsin. We're calling it the Talking Play Tour because that's what we're going to be doing, talk and play. You can learn more at playvolutionhq.com/events. Hope to see you there.